episode of Leonard Looks at Life. In this episode, we look at, in springtime, a young man's fancy turns to baseball. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Leonard Looks at Life. Well, we can all congratulate ourselves that we have almost made it through another winter. We've put February behind us, March is upon us, coming in like a lamb, going out like a lion. And one of the things that March brings is it brings us closer to the baseball season, which is very near and dear to my heart. The Baseball Hall of Famer Roger Hornsby said, "People ask me what I do in winter when there's no baseball. I'll tell you what I do. I stare out the window and I wait for spring." Well, I've been staring out the window and waiting for spring, and now it is almost upon us. Baseball has a rich heritage, and so much of it dovetails the history of this country as well. And so to understand the country, it helps to understand baseball. For a long time, baseball was referred to as the national pastime. And in many ways, I know some other sports have passed it up these days, but I still think baseball reflects this country. Baseball reflects a lot of the history that we've been a part of, and there is so much that's going on within a baseball game. Many people will say it's slow, it's boring, but they just don't get what's really going on. Wes Westrum, who was a catcher and later a manager in the major leagues, I think said it best. He said, "Baseball is a lot like church. Many attend, but few understand." A number of years ago, there was a baseball commissioner by the name of A. Bartlett Giamatti. And I grew up in Ohio. I'm a big Cincinnati Reds fan. And most Cincinnati Reds fans do not have fond memories of A. Bartlett Giamatti, mostly because he was the one that banned Pete Rose for life from baseball. And I don't want to get into that, but just to mention that A. Bartlett Giamatti wasn't the one that did that. Now, what was interesting about Mr. Giamatti is before he became baseball commissioner, he was a Renaissance scholar. He was a president of Yale University and of the National League. He served as commissioner of Major League Baseball from April 1st, 1989, until his death, September 1st, 1989. He was the author of several books. One in particular was called Take Time for Paradise, Americans and Their Games. And in that book, he does devote a chapter to the game of baseball. And Mr. Giamatti saw baseball as narrative. And by that he meant that it's the story of going home after having left home. The story of how difficult it is to find the origins one so deeply needs to find. It is the literary mode that he calls romance. Now, that's not like a Hallmark movie romance or a Harlequin book romance. It's romance from a literary perspective. And I would think an Ivy League Renaissance scholar might know something about literary romance. He goes on to mention that home is an English word virtually impossible to translate into other languages. No translation catches the association, the mixture of memory and longing, the sense of security and autonomy and accessibility, the aroma of inclusiveness, of freedom from weariness that cling to the word home and are absent from the house or even my house. He says all literary romance derives from the Odyssey and is about rejoining. Rejoining a beloved, rejoining a parent to child, rejoining a land to its rightful owner or rule. Romance is about putting things aright after some tragedy has put them asunder. It is about restoration of the right relations among things. And going home is where that restoration occurs because that is where it matters most. Home plate has a peculiar significance, for it is the goal of both teams. Unlike most other games, in baseball, everyone wants to arrive at the same place, which is where they start. Even opponents gather at the same curious, unique place called home plate. Siblings who may see the world separately but share the same sight lines are backed up and yet ruled by the parent figure, the umpire, whose place is the only one not completely defined. Mr. Giamatti notes that after taking the first turn at first, a player often flounders far out at the edges of the ordered world at rocky second, the furthest part from home. Whoever remains out there is said to die on base. Home is finally beyond reach in a hostile world full of quirks and tricks and hostile folk. There are no dragons in baseball, only shortstops, but they can emerge from nowhere to cut one down. He goes on to mention that when one is given to round third, a long journey seemingly over, the end is in sight. Then the hunger for home, the drive to rejoin one's earlier self and one's fellows is a pressing, growing, screaming in the blood. Often the effort fails. The hunger is unsatisfied as the catcher bars fulfillment, as the umpire father is too strong in his denial. Or if the attempt, long in planning and execution, works, then the reunion and all it means in total, the runner is a returned hero, and the teammates are for an instant all true family. Virtually innumerable are the dangers. The faces of failure one can meet if fortunate even enough to leave home. Most efforts fail. Failure to achieve the first leg of the voyage is extremely likely. He notes about a home run. A home run is the definitive kill, the overcoming of obstacles at one stroke, the gratification instantaneous in knowing that one has earned a risk-free journey out, around, and back, a journey to be taken at a leisurely pace so as to savor the freedom, the magical invulnerability from denial or delay. Almost as far back as I can remember, I have been a fan of baseball. And it's funny, I still remember I have a birthday that's late in the year. So while I was old enough to start school, the cutoff date for baseball was a couple months earlier than the cutoff date for school. And even now, I can still remember how upset I was as an 8-year-old that my friends were able to play baseball and I had to wait another year. I played baseball as long as I could. I played it until just 2 years ago. I played baseball or softball, and I just ran out of places to play. I'm not saying I was ever any good. I'm just saying that I enjoyed it, and it has always been something that I've enjoyed playing, and I have enjoyed following it. I've been a Cincinnati Reds fan for as long as I can remember, and, you know, they spoiled me because as I was growing up, I got to see them go to the World Series a number of times. They won back-to-back World Series championships in 1975 and 1976 when I was still in high school. I just remember being so elated that had happened. And after the disappointment of them losing the World Series in 70 and 72, how excited I was in 1975 when they did win the World Series. I think I might say a bit tongue-in-cheek that there's an ailment that I've been afflicted with for as far back as I can remember. As a young boy, I was exposed to baseball, and like most boys growing up in southwestern Ohio in the 70s, I caught a bad case of baseball fever. Baseball fever, like many other fevers, can cause one to lose touch with reality and to act in odd ways. As a child, I was prone to spend countless hours during the summer playing the game of baseball. If I could not find any fellow sufferers to share in a game, I would spend hours simply throwing a baseball against the back wall of the elementary school that was just across the street from where I lived. As I did this, I often was accompanied by the delusion that I was pitching in the seventh game of the World Series and that the outcome hung on each and every pitch that I threw. Night brought little relief as the fever led me to sit on the front porch with my father and brother and listen to Al Michaels or Marty Brenneman and the old left-hander Joe Nuxall describe a baseball game on the radio, hoping to hear phrases like, "That one is out of here," and "This one belongs to the Reds." Back in those days, every game wasn't on TV, and so if you wanted to follow the game, you followed them by listening on the radio, and I think baseball is so attuned, so suited to being on the radio because of the way that things tend to focus on one instance of the field at a time, that as you listen to a baseball game, you can watch it in your mind. On days when the weather was bad, I'd spend my time studying little pieces of cardboard, memorizing the numbers and facts printed on the back, and perhaps recreating the picture on the front of how each player held his bat or wound up to throw the baseball. I remember begging my father for change. If I could get a quarter, I could run up to the corner drugstore and buy baseball cards. That time, you could get 5 cards and a stick of gum for a nickel. And if we would have known what those cards were worth today, my dad would have given me a lot more money to go and buy those baseball cards. But we'd buy those little pieces of cardboard and the cardboard-like gum that came with them. And over the years, I've constantly guarded these treasures from harmful disasters like house cleanings and garage sales. And yes, I do have baseball cards that I bought back in the mid to late 60s. I've kept them all. There were some days back then when the baseball fever had me in such a state of delirious splendor. On these wonderful occasions, my father would take me to magical places called Crosley Field or Riverfront Stadium, where I had the grand privilege of watching my heroes play this game that I had come to love. I only got to do that one, two, maybe three times a year when I was a boy. That was such a special time to go to a Major League Baseball game. As the years went on, the fever never went away. It would subside for a time, but it would always return in the spring. I moved out of Ohio for a number of years, but every year we would return to visit family. I would always make sure that the trip would coincide mysteriously with a Reds homestand. This would invisibly, irresistibly draw me and my father, and later my sons, back to a place where others gathered to watch those chosen men who somehow were fortunate to earn their living by playing this child's game. Fortune has smiled on me, and I moved back to southwestern Ohio, and for several years where I worked, I could look out from the building in downtown Cincinnati and gaze across at Riverfront Stadium, that place where I went as a youth to see men named Morgan, Rose, Bench, Perez, Foster, Griffey, Concepcion, Geronimo, Gullett, and others. Sometimes at lunch, I would walk around the stadium. I could almost hear the cheers of days gone by. I was able to see Great American Ballpark rise up and take form. And I've seen Larkin, Casey, Griffey Jr., Votto, Phillips, Bruce build memories of a new era. And now it's spring again. And with spring will come not only green grass and flowers, but the return of baseball and the return of baseball fever. This is one ailment that they have not yet found a cure for, and I hope that they never do. Yes, it's spring. Baseball's coming back. If you are a baseball fan, then I know you are looking forward to it as well. If you're not a baseball fan, I'd encourage you to take a few moments to try to understand this game. It has no clock. It goes until it's over. And there's something to be said about a game that goes until it reaches its right conclusion.
To go back to Mr. Giamatti for a moment, he mentions that much of what we love later in a sport is what it recalls to us about ourselves at our earliest. And those memories, now smoothed and bending away from us in the interior of ourselves, are not simply of childhood or of a childhood game. They are memories of our best hopes. They are memories of a time when all that would be better was before us, as a hope. And the hope was fastened to a game. One hope not so much to be the best who ever played as simply to stay in the game and ride it wherever it would go, culling its rhythms and realizing its promises. That is, I think, what it means to remember one's best hopes and to remember them in a game and revive them whenever one sees the game played long after playing is over. Well, my playing days are long over now for baseball, but I still enjoy the game. It still reminds me of when I was a kid. It still reminds me of what I once hoped to be, and maybe I still can be, in just in different ways. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Leonard Looks at Life. I hope you will join me again. I would also encourage you to check out my blog at leonardslines.com, and you can find me on X at Leonard's Lines as well. Thanks. Have a great day. Spring is here. Let's play a doubleheader.